Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, May 31st, 2018. I'd like to ask you to please have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down the names, addresses, emails, web pages, and phone numbers so you can take action for the environment. Let's start with announcements. The California Native Plant Society Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration this Saturday, June 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Sand Hill Bluff and Wilder Ranch State Park. Last Saturday, they scouted Sand Hill Bluff along with our work site at Baldwin Bluff. Our efforts on ice plant removal have been very successful. On Saturday, we will target an annual non-native called Senecio elegans that seems to be making inroads on the bluff. We will activate a rapid response approach and focus on this new potential invader. We'll see you there. Please note that due to parking constraints at the project site, we will meet at Wilder Ranch State Park and carpool to the site. Please be available at about 9:45 at the following location to carpool. Take Highway 1 north through Santa Cruz, continue north to the turnoff on the left-hand side for Wilder Ranch State Park. Watch for the sign that indicates the left turn. Once in the kiosk, let the person there know you are doing habitat restoration and they will give you a parking pass. Meet the group at the interpretive sign by the bathrooms in the parking lot at least 15 minutes before 10. The California Native Plant Society is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands in Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. But if things get particularly unpleasant, they call it a day. Saturday looks like it's going to be good. Tools are provided. Bring your gloves and some water. If you want more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. You can email her at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at pacbell.net. Or visit the website at www.cruzcnps.org. That's CRUZCNPS.org. And tree sitters and blockades continue to stall pipelines in the Virginia, North Carolina forests. Jackson Phillips reports from the front lines of the growing Hellbender Autonomous Zone as blockades and tree sits are stopping the construction of two pipelines in the story from It's Going Down. In the hills of Appalachia, two humans in the sky persist, constituting a formidable blockade against the proposed Mountain Valley Pipeline. For 92 days, the Aerial Resistance Squadron has prevented destruction and the flames of pipeline resistance are spreading. Last week, Nutty came down from her monopod on Jefferson National Forest after 56 days. She was blocked from receiving supplies for at least the last 6 weeks by Forest Service personnel. Her action helped encourage a fire of resistance, inspiring other folks to take action and even take to the trees. When I started, I couldn't have imagined this. People who aren't sure what they should do to reach out, because trying to do stuff alone is hard. Direct action is really important. Appeals to authority won't get what we need. Hopefully, more will happen to make this pipeline impossible, Nutty said. Lucky for Nutty, another member of the tree squad took to the skies nearby on May 21st, 2 days after Nutty descended. Fern McDougall is continuing the blockade of an access road that MVP wishes to use for transporting drilling and extraction equipment up Peters Mountain. For 1 week, she has been perched in a sky pod, which consists of a 30-foot-high platform held aloft by complex rigging of ropes to nearby trees. This pipeline could shift hydrology, and it will be unstable because the region goes through. In karst areas with limestone, there can be collapses that lead to contamination of groundwater and surface water. We need to vehemently oppose all fossil fuel infrastructure at this point, Fern said. At the top of the Appalachian Ridge, Deckard continues the original tree sit into its 92nd day. From Fern up to Deckard, an entire area has been reclaimed by environmentalists and renamed the Hellbender Autonomous Zone. Although he has been blocked from resupply, Deckard said on day 84, "I've got plenty of food and water. Mentally, I'm fine, and I can't complain." This resistance has already significantly delayed the Mountain Valley Pipeline, and costs are piling up for the corporation. When asked what this action could accomplish, Deckard told us that tree sitters hope to inspire more unified direct action, as other venues of resistance have been somewhat exhausted. "Many people have become completely disillusioned with the system and have no faith in their elected officials. You have to resist in diverse ways, and it is going to take a multi-pronged effect. When we unite, it puts maximum pressure on the regime," continued Deckard. And in a related story, Mountain Valley Pipeline and federal marshals force new tree sitter to abandon post in this story by Little Teal Crossing, as found in its Going Down in the New Earth First Newswire. The following report comes from those at Little Teal Crossing, a tree sit that is resisting the destruction of wilderness and family farms in the path of Mountain Valley Pipeline. On 8 a.m. on May 28th, Mountain Valley Pipeline employees were forced to cease construction yet again at Little Teal Crossing. A new aerial blockade 60 feet in the air was established just outside the easement, tethered to multiple trees located directly in the path of the proposed Mountain Valley Pipeline. The new tree sitter, called Sprout, stated, "The ropes attached to the trees directly in the path of the proposed MVP are supporting my platform. If even one of these ropes is cut, I could sustain a serious or even fatal injury. My life is on the line to defend these trees from MVP's destruction." Dozens of supporters gathered this Memorial Day morning to support Sprout as she hung in the balance between two trees over a muddy creek dirtied with sediment from MVP construction. Less than 4 hours after Sprout ascended to the new tree sit, federal marshals delivered the same notice of civil contempt served to Inc. In an unprecedented move, the marshal ordered her to appear in court today at 1 p.m. as she hung suspended in the air, leaving her only 1 hour to respond. One Franklin County community member said, "I am astounded by the lengths that MVP will go to in order to construct this pipeline. First Inc., now Sprout. This is state suppression, weaponized for corporate profit. I'm grateful to the tree sitters for putting their bodies on the line to protect the environment we all share." Sprout was forced to descend from her tree sit at 12:30 today. Her supporters gathered at the base of her tree to assist her descent. "Though we were on the ground, the fight is not over. We will win." And in West Virginia, a pipeline worker injures and nearly kills a tree sitter in this story from It's Going Down, as found on the Earth First Newswire. A Mountain Valley Pipeline worker has climbed up dangerously close to a tree sitter's resistance site, injuring the activist and endangering both of their lives in this report from Jackson Phillips. On the afternoon of May 25th, a hired climber for the Mountain Valley Pipeline began clearing branches with a saw perilously near an activist 75 feet in the air in Franklin County, Virginia. "Today they showed up and I felt my tree shake. An MVP worker climbed up 10 feet below me, telling me that they were going to arrest me and they were going to drag me out of the tree," Inc. said. Inc. told a reporter the situation was then escalated by MVP and law enforcement. "They had a nearby tree and I got out on my traverse. I went over and clipped my harness to the trunk. I yelled to alarm them that they could kill me if they continued cutting. MVP and U.S. Marshals yelled at the worker to continue. In the face of the threat sacrificing their life, Inc. stayed clipped to the oak tree. Undeterred, the MVP worker cut off the top quarter of the tree trunk, which then fell on the activist. Despite a bloody wound, the activist had the presence of mind to know if the trunk fell on the worker, then they both would be in dire straits over 60 feet from the ground. He cut the upper portion of the trunk and it injured me. The tree trunk's weight settled against my ribs. Then I had to hold the trunk long enough so the MVP worker could get down. If I had dropped the portion of the trunk that I was clipped into, it would have fallen and injured him," Inc. said. Inc. has been up for roughly 2 weeks as part of a larger blockade resistance in the path of the proposed Mountain Valley Pipeline. As many as 9 people have taken to the skies in Appalachia in the last 3 months. 6 tree sitters have come down under various circumstances, and the flames of resistance have spread at the foot of the Appalachian Mountains. And in South Africa, we read that a hunter has been killed by buffalo right after killing a buffalo. In this story from the Committee to Abolish Sport Hunting, as found on the Earth First Newswire. And this is a one of those Nature Bats Last stories. A buffalo killed professional hunter Claude Keelhans in what is believed to Lavubu River shortly after midday on Tuesday, the 22nd of May. Keelhans was the owner of the Gawila Hunting Safaris. It is believed the buffalo hit a femoral artery, and Keelhans, one of the country's most finest ethical hunters, died almost instantly. His ex-wife, Karina van der Wer Merwe, speaking from the Keelhans farm in Agatha, said Claude and his party had shot and killed a buffalo as planned. They were going to clear the brush around the carcass and load it when another buffalo blindsided Keelhans. While late, Keelhans, a fermit Christian, grew up in Africa and joined the police before moving into the PH world, private hunting, professional hunting world. He knew the brush well and understood conservation as well as trophy hunting. He leaves three children, his father, and siblings. Funeral arrangements have yet to be announced. Probably not for the water buffalo. Here in the United States, here's the update from the field, from the Buffalo Field Campaign. We always told the Montana Department of Livestock that hazing was not only abusive, but absolutely unnecessary. The buffalo are proving that point once again. Nearly all of the couple of hundred buffalo who migrated into the Hebgen Basin to their calving grounds on and around Horse Butte have slowly made their way east to the summer ranges within Yellowstone National Park. This is the third spring that the buffalo have given the opportunity to do what they want, and they have shown us that if given that chance, they will make their own way in their own time. It has been amazing to watch them and learn these new lessons from the buffalo when they aren't being hounded and harassed by humans. We've been with multiple groups who are just taking their sweet time meandering, not even a mile a day, towards summer grounds, grazing and breathing, calves napping and playing, slow and deliberate footsteps that are not in any hurry, but still manage to cover a lot of ground gently and smoothly. This is how it works in the buffalo world. Another lesson in listening to the buffalo and what beautiful teachers they are. With this migration, the Hebgen Basin is nearly void of buffalo, though a few small family groups remain for now. Our field season will be closing at the end of this week, and soon our focus will turn to outreach, tabling in the park, and letting some of the millions of park visitors know what Yellowstone is doing to the buffalo, and when no one but the Buffalo Field Campaign is around to bear witness. It's a bittersweet time of the year for us, living in this stunning wild community, going through all the good and bad times with the buffalo and each other. We have shared so much blood, sweat, tears, and laughter. Parting ways, saying goodbye to the buffalo for now is never easy. But to the four directions we will all go, and we will return when the cold reclaims the land and the buffalo move this way once again. This will be the last weekly update from the field until November. For the summer, you will hear from us every other week, and you will hear that on the Earth First update. If you'd like to get involved in volunteering for the summer, which involves public outreach in Yellowstone National Park, contact the Buffalo Field Campaign at buffalofieldcampaign.org. And the largest fish factory vessel in the world has been arrested and seized in this story from the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. The largest fish factory vessel in the world was arrested and seized in Peru pending criminal charges. Agents from the Peruvian Environmental Prosecutor's Office boarded the Demonziajo last night as part of a federal crime investigation based on presumed acts of illegal fishing. Acting on a formal request filed by the Ministry of the Environment Prosecutor's Office has ordered the vessel to be detained pending further investigation. The new criminal case is predicated on the same acts of illegal fishing proven beyond all dispute that led to the imposition of a multi-million-dollar administrative fine in 2016. In addition, Peruvian authorities have also accused the Demonziajo of polluting the marine environment through the illegal discharge of fluids and effluents while anchored in Chimbote. Over the past week, the Demonziajo has twice requested permission to leave port in an obvious attempt to escape the tightening noose On April 20th, 2018, Sea Shepherd delivered a formal letter to the Peruvian Ministry of Production, the agency that issued the multi-million-dollar fine, imploring the government to take additional steps to ensure the ship pay for its crimes. Despite the Damanzajo switching flag states from Peru to Belize while anchored in Peruvian waters, Peru is taking a strong stance in its efforts to bring the Damanzajo to justice. Under the Peruvian Penal Code, successful conviction carries a penalty of 3 to 5 years of incarceration. Sea Shepherd applaud Peru's commitment to combating IUU fishing and continues to provide support to Peru to help bring an end to the rampant overexploitation of the oceans. And suspected poachers have been shot dead in a Kenyan national park in this story from Reuters. Wildlife troopers shot dead three armed men in Kenya's Mount Elgon National Park on Wednesday, while two other suspected poachers were injured but escaped, the Kenya Wildlife Service said. The officers were on routine patrol inside the park when they encountered the five poachers, two of whom were armed, KWS said in a statement. Poaching has declined sharply in Kenya from a peak in 2012, but it remains a problem for some 69 elephants and 9 rhinos killed last year. Earlier this month, three rhinos were found dead with their horns missing in Meru National Park's Rhino Sanctuary, in what Kenya's tourist ministry said was an act of poaching. 3 months earlier, a prominent American investigator of the illegal ivory and rhino trade was found dead in his Nairobi home with a stab wound in his neck. A conservation group said Esmond Bradley Martin, who had spent decades tracking the movement of animal products from Africa to markets in Asia, was about to publish a report exposing how the ivory trade had shifted from China to neighboring countries, with stories by Aaron Macho and editing by Catherine Evans of Reuters. And Romania has broken up an alleged 25 million euro illegal logging ring in this story by Arthur Nelson of The Guardian, as found in the Earth First Newswire. Romania's security forces have mounted a series of raids to break up an alleged 25 million euro illegal logging ring in what is believed to be the largest operation of its kind yet seen in Europe. Officers from Romania's Directorate for Investigation of Organized Crime and Terrorism swooped on 23 addresses, including factories owned by the Austrian timber group Schweigenhofer Hold Industry, according to local press reports. A government statement yesterday said they had reasonable suspicion that since 2011, several individuals have constituted an organized criminal group, the members of the group acting to hijack public auctions, organization at the level of forestry departments. Some civil servants were also involved in the tree-cutting offenses, the release said. The case involves deforestation in the Carpathian Mountains, which shelters some of Europe's last virgin forests, similar in nature to Poland's Via Luisa, but on a larger scale. Greenpeace estimates that 3 hectares of spruce, beech, fir, and sycamore trees are lost every hour in the 200,000-hectare Carpathian biodiversity haven. Deforestation is a live issue in Europe, with a mooted palm oil ban currently being discussed by EU institutions to protect rainforests in Southeast Asia. Yesterday's crackdown in the Carpathians followed an EIA report in 2015, which found evidence of illegal sourced wood entering Schweigenhofer's supply chain. David Gell, the Environmental Investigation Agency's Eurasia Program's coordinator, told The Guardian, "This is the first time that a company has really been held to account for illegal logging on this scale in Europe. It sends a huge signal to the timber industry that illegal logging in Europe's last great ancient forests will have consequences." And invasive fist-sized Cuban tree frogs have been discovered in New Orleans. Officials say frogs caught at the city's Audubon Zoo could soon pose a threat to native frogs across the Mississippi River. In this story from the Associated Press in New Orleans, invasive noxious Cuban tree frogs that eat smaller frogs and grow as big as a human fist have established a population in New Orleans, and officials say they could soon pose a threat to native frogs across the Mississippi River. U.S. Geological Survey says frogs caught at the Audubon Zoo in the city and at a nearby riverfront park are the first established population of Cuban tree frogs in the U.S. mainland outside of Florida, where they've been multiplying at least since the 1950s. The captured frogs probably arrived on palm trees from Florida that were planted in the zoo in 2016, USGS researcher ecologist Brad Glorioso wrote in a study published in the April issue of the journal Biological Invasions. They have noxious skin secretions, lay their eggs in bird baths and fish ponds, and they can clog plumbing and cause power outages by shorting utility switches where they seek refuge, he said in a news release. They could easily cross the river on vehicles, boats, barges, or debris and prey on smaller frogs, he wrote in the article. Local tree frogs are considerably smaller than the Cuban tree frog, said Jeff Bounty, herpetologist at the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries Natural Heritage Program. The natives are about a quarter to a half dollar size on your kitchen window at night. These guys are up to 5.5 inches in body length. We're talking about a fist-sized frog now, Bounty said in a phone interview. And researchers may have been underestimating roadkill numbers in this story from the Oxford University Press, as found on Science Daily. A new study in the Journal of Urban Ecology, published by the Oxford University Press, indicates the number of wild animals killed by motor vehicles may be much higher than is generally reported or understood. Roads can have negative impacts on wildlife through direct effects such as fatal collisions with vehicles or indirect effects such as changing and fragmenting animal habitats. There are millions of wildlife deaths on British roads every year, and the resulting carcasses represent a substantial amount of food for scavengers. By removing roadkill in urban areas, scavengers perform a valuable ecosystem service, but the rapid removal of these carcasses by scavengers have led researchers to underestimate the impact of roads on wildlife. In order to evaluate the scale and context of urban roadkill scavenging, researchers here examined which species scavenge on roadkill in urban areas, the likelihood of roadkill being removed by scavengers, and whether spatial or temporal factors such as location and time of day influence the rate of removal. Researchers deployed camera traps baited with chicken heads to simulate roadkill corpses in 6 residential and 6 parkland sites in the city of Cardiff, England. 7 species were observed removing the roadkill, with corvids, or crows, being the most common scavengers responsible for 42% of the removal. Of the 120 corpses planted, 90 were removed within 12 hours. Time of day had a significant effect on the rate of removal, with the number of carcass removals peaking in the first few hours of daylight. Of roadkill placed at 9 a.m., 62% of the carcasses had been removed after only 2 hours. Removal of corpses by scavengers could mean that the actual number of roadkill deaths is 6 times more than that observed during surveys. And the mountain gorilla population in Africa has risen above 1,000 in a story by Damian Carrington of The Guardian, as found on the Earth First Newswire. It is one of the most recognizable animals in the world and one of the most endangered, but a new census reveals the surviving mountain gorilla population has now risen above 1,000. This represents a rise of 25% since 2010 in its heartland of the Virunga Massif in Central Africa. It also marks success for intensive conservation work in the region, riven by armed conflict and where 6 park guards were murdered in April. Sir David Attenborough, whose 1979 encounter with the great apes remains a famous television moment, said, "When I first visited the mountain gorillas, the situation was dire. The number of these remarkable animals was dreadfully small. It is incredibly heartening, therefore, to see how the effort of so many different groups, communities, governments, NGOs have paid off." But Attenborough, an ambassador for Worldwide Fund of UK, warned the threats to mountain gorillas haven't disappeared entirely, so now the challenge must be to ensure that these achievements are sustained long into the future, and that's the World Wildlife Fund. The 1979 encounter led him to reflect there's more meaning and mutual understanding in exchanging a glance with a gorilla than with any other animal I know. They are so like us. And beavers are doing a damn good job of cleaning water in this story from the University of Exeter, as found on Science Daily. Beavers could help clean up polluted rivers and stem the loss of valuable soils from farms, new research shows. The study undertaken by scientists at the University of Exeter using a captive beaver trial run by the Devon Wildlife Trust has demonstrated the significant impact the animals have had on reducing the flow of tons of soil and nutrients from nearby fields into a local river system. The research led by hydrologist Professor Richard Brazier found that the work of a single family of beavers had removed high levels of sediment, nitrogen, and phosphorus from the water that had flowed through their 2.5-hectare enclosure. The family of beavers, which have lived in fenced sites at a secret location in West Devon since 2011, have built 13 dams, slowing the flow of water and creating a series of deep ponds along the course of what was once a small stream. Researchers measured the amount of sediment suspended, phosphorus and nitrogen in the water running into the site, and then compared this to water as it ran out of the site, having passed through the beavers' ponds and dams. They also measured the amount of sediment, phosphorus, and nitrogen trapped in the dams in each of the ponds. Their results showed the dams had trapped more than 100 tons of sediment, 70% of which was soil, which had eroded from intensively managed grassland fields upstream. Further investigation revealed that this sediment contained high concentrations of nitrogen and phosphorus, which are nutrients known to cause problems for the wildlife in rivers and streams, and which also need to be removed from human water supplies to meet drinking water standards. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 9 o'clock. And you can tune in tomorrow at 3 p.m. right here on 101.3 and www.freakradio.org for a rebroadcast as part of our Environment Friday programming. You can also tune in to WMNB 107.1 North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 in the morning, KBOG 97.9 in Bandon, Oregon, Fridays at 10 a.m., KRFP 90.3 in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m., KOWA 106.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturdays at 7 a.m., WLSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon. Or you can tune to KHCF 89.9 in Morgan Hill and Gilroy, California, KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California, and KPHD 93.3 in Modesto, California, or Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California. Check the websites for the day and time of rebroadcast. Or you could always go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number 4all.net, where you can listen online or download this or any previous Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.